Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro. And this week, my guest is an encore performance from Apple, former Senior Director of Marketing, Michael Gardenberg. Michael, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, this is the third time you've been on the show. It's awesome. We've had a lot of fun before. This time, because we've discussed your background in the previous two shows and how you came to work for Apple and some of the life and times at Apple, I thought this time we'd kind of go off track a little bit. And we'll put in the show notes the previous two shows if people want to listen to them. And so what I did was I made a list of stuff that was on my mind and sent it to you the other day. And you said, looks good. So let's just have some fun.
Sounds good. And third time's a charm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a feeling you'll be back on the show again. We have a rule, the guests have to wait 6 months before they can be on the show. So I did it at the earliest opportunity, and it's great to have you back, Michael.
All right. So what are we talking about today?
So I've got a list of stuff here, and I thought what we would just do is just kind of tick through them. The first thing that's on my mind is this business of Apple spending a whole boatload of money on original content. The question is this a worthy endeavor? They kind of got off to a rocky start with Planet of the Apps, which was not regarded well in terms of production values. Carpool Karaoke is going along better, but Apple had to hire some serious heavyweights in the industry. And it remains to be seen if this will translate into the kind of quality content that other services like Netflix and Amazon are producing. And what is Apple's motivation? What does Apple hope to get out of this? Are they throwing away too much money? Should they be paying attention to other things? What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, you know, Netflix brought us things like Daredevil, Jessica Jones, some, you know, great
Jessica
other
Jones,
stuff.
My favorite.
Yeah, I mean, and they're delivering it in 4K if you have a TV that handles it. Amazon's given us some really great original stuff, Mozart in the Jungle, my personal favorite, Bosch, based on the Michael Connelly novels. And Apple gave us Planet of the Apps with three people who you kind of wonder, like, what on earth were they doing there in the first place? And I watched it, and it was like satire to me.
Can we use the word amateurish?
That would be, I think, too high praise. My opinion, this was up there with the original Gong Show, as far as I'm concerned. Kids, ask your parents. It was just like, I was just watching a train wreck. I can't believe, you know, Apple did this. They had, one person on there with her rather dubious, you know, selling, you know, women's products and all sorts of strange things. It was just bizarre. You know, again, you have to wonder, well, okay, we're Apple, we're apps, we're going to do this type of content. But it clearly lacked, I don't even know what. I don't know who was behind this project. Obviously, it was green-lighted by Eddie Q. So someone along the way said, this is a great idea. Let's move forward. Let's film this. Let's release it. And I was just watching going, wow. And the same thing with Karaoke Carpool. I mean, it appears that Apple wants to be a player in the TV market. I mean, we know this, that Apple TV, the fourth generation that was released was not the Apple TV Apple wanted to release. Apple really would love for us to, cord cut and
we'll get to the Apple TV later in the show.
Yeah. Right, as services. But content is supposed to be tied to that. So the idea that Apple could be Netflix and that this could be a driver. This is one of those things where you have to say, why are they in this business? Clearly, this is something Johnny Ive had nothing to do with. And unless Apple can really kick up the game in terms of things that not only are acceptable, as far as I'm concerned, the stuff right now isn't even, you know, in that range, but is stuff that Apple can be proud of, where people are buzzing, even if they're critiquing it, like, you know, the Defenders, which has had some, you know, Netflix, some plus, some minuses, but people are talking about it. The only people I've heard that have talked about Planet of the Apps in a positive way were people at Apple, who I kind of felt were like obligated to say so. So, you know, guys, if you want to be in this business, be in this business. But this is clearly not your forte. And your whole television strategy from ground up needs to be rethought. And at the end of the day, you know, you're playing in a whole different league with the people who provide video, who create video content, than you were in music. So, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm giving this an F.
I got the feeling that Apple.
I was aiming for D minus, but nope. Sorry, I'm grading this on an F.
I kind of got the feeling at the outset that Apple was leveraging its experience with tapping into the mainstream. You know, they've been so successful in understanding iPods and music and the pop culture and mobility, and that translated into, you know, well, let's do something with applications to jazz up the developer community, and they'll be glued to their TV sets, and it'd be entertainment for the geek developers. I kind of got the feeling that they did that going into it, but it misfired.
Yeah, that sounds about right, because, you know, there's probably 20 people in Silicon Valley that would be interested in this topic. Not to mention, it was, you know, a total Shark Tank ripoff, which has a limited audience to begin with, because most people don't care about this stuff. And, you know, so we'll just say Planet of the Apps was the worst. Carpool Karaoke was something they picked up elsewhere, but again, sort of niche. None of these things, in my opinion, are things that drive Apple in the content space. This just doesn't seem to be something that Apple knows how to do, and maybe should figure out how to get more mainstream content onto their devices rather than developing their own stuff. And, you know, we've seen, like, what was the number? $1 billion that's going to be devoted to this stuff. To me, that's $1 billion. Well, you know, the late Senator Dirksen in the U.S.
I know, I was thinking that.
a billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're adding up serious money.
Real money, yeah.
Right, real money. Yeah. you know, and, you know, Apple has $1 billion to throw at stuff like this. But I think the question that Apple is facing, and it's not a question of just Apple, it's Apple, it's Google, it's Microsoft, it's even Facebook, is how do we conquer the living room, the den, where people spend their time in front of the biggest screen they have in their house with the best audio system in their house? And how do they take control of that, where people are using that as their portal into that world, as opposed to something else? I mean, I know when I watch 4K Netflix, I'm using this, you know, mediocre Netflix app that came on my Vizio TV. But hey, you know what? It gives me all my Netflix content in 4K.
Do you mind telling us what 4K TV you have? Because I'm getting really close to pulling the trigger myself.
I have a Vizio 60-inch something or other that I picked up on the cheap, although I already had buyer's remorse about the day after I bought it because it didn't have HDR, which probably is the next big thing.
Yep.
So, you know, TV aficionados, again, call me a little skeptical here. There's so little 4K content to begin with. That, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that you get 4K almost for free these days, why not? HDR is even less, and maybe it'll be the next big thing, but, you know, maybe save that for your next TV. Don't pay extra for it. But, you know, it's great. And I can watch, you know, Netflix in 4K. I can watch Amazon in 4K, and they're doing all their original content in 4K. And in the meantime, my Apple TV is limited to, you know, standard high definition, which, okay, it's behind the curve of even the the basic stuff that's out there from a technology perspective, but from a content perspective, I think Apple needs to, again, figure out how to work with the people who are creating this content rather than trying to go it themselves. And I suspect part of the reason is, let's go back historically to music. When Apple got into the music business, Steve Jobs went out to the, music labels and said, hey, give us some, stuff. We're going to sell it for 99 cents. The music industry was a disaster at the time. Napster was killing it. Steve went and said, look, what do you got to lose? We're like 0.0001%. Give us a shot. And from there, Apple went to control pretty much the music industry. And I think the video industry, the people who are creating movies and television and original content that's worth watching, are saying, we don't want to become to music, what Apple did to that. And so they're very hesitant into creating these type of deals, the deals that Apple needs to really create a true Apple television. So one way, around it is, hey, we'll create
true our own Apple television. You mean a display?
No, a true Apple television experience. I'm not, going the Gene Munster route. Apple television, and now I think he's Apple Virtual Reality. And maybe there is an Apple television somewhere living in Cupertino.
Well, one of the things I wish Apple would do would be to get more involved in the technology and culture of the video industry as a side. There are ways to do that. Advertising and home theater magazines, going to the home theater shows like Cedia and showing off their wares. Doing a great industrial design to make the Apple TV beautiful and desirable as an object. I think the Rokus have out-designed the black brick of the Apple TV. And be on the standards committees more diversely. But Apple doesn't do that. They just kind of built a little box and put it in the store, and they make these shows and they just wait for the good things to happen, and they're not going to happen unless they do some of these other things.
I mean, without saying too many things that I shouldn't say, I can say the fourth generation Apple TV is not at what Apple wanted to ship.
Can you say?
Well, if you just think about it, right, and draw lines from A, B, C, D, does this sound like, really the device that Apple wanted to make as the breakthrough TV product?
Can I ask you if there were manufacturing or legal or other product management constraints?
Sure, you can ask whatever you want. But even the video game aspect of it didn't quite pan off. You look at the gaming content, and it's not even good casual gaming, at least in my opinion. You're seeing a lot of mediocre titles. One of the things I find amusing is you're seeing a lot of what they call, retro titles. So I have this super powerful device, and you're giving me stuff that looks like it was on the original, Nintendo NES. So gaming hasn't really driven Apple TV the same way it has on the phone side of the business. Content hasn't really done it. We've talked about single sign-on, which is one of the things that I think frustrates a lot of Apple TV users. Why do I have to keep authenticating every channel I own? And Apple says, well, we've got this worked out, but it's like six cable providers in like Boise, Idaho that have signed on board.
We should get people on board first and then make the announcement instead of trying to strong arm people by developing the technology and then doing it halfway.
When you're talking about Comcast, Time Warner, Optimum, then you can talk about single sign-on. Like I said, when you're talking about something that, six farmers out in Boise are using on their stuff, and they can sign on. So TV has eluded Apple. And, as much as I think that famous quote in Walter Isaacson's book where Steve, allegedly said, I cracked this thing. Well, maybe not so much. So, going back to the idea of original content, that's fine. One of the things that I think Apple got in the Beats acquisition had nothing to do with hardware. It had to do with a guy named Jimmy Iovine, who was a music legend going back to the days when he was one of the producers on Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, to where he is now. And, you know, he's been able to basically help guide Apple in terms of music, because he's a music guy. He's not just some guy who listens to music. It'll be interesting if Apple pulls someone who was not involved in, you know, Netflix programming or Hulu programming, but someone that actually has created great content.
Well, Apple has hired a couple of heavyweight executives. I forget their names, but they brought in some really good guys from other studios to supervise this higher level content. I also wonder if maybe the first two efforts weren't infrastructure. You know, let's work on the production, the mechanisms behind the scenes, the movement of data, the publishing, and so on, and kind of get all the infrastructure down pat, and then move on to something else. Because if you try to do too much at once, you have problems, and you don't want to mar really high quality content with bad infrastructure, bad delivery, and bad production. So maybe it's good they got their feet wet with these two. That's part of it. But the question is, let's change gears. Suppose Apple were successful under the supervision of these new executives they've hired and start producing really high quality content. Some of the shows that you mentioned on Netflix, Jessica Jones, Defenders, Longmire, other shows like that, that people really, really liked. What's to be gained from that in terms of respectability or revenue compared to other aspects of the business? Like iTunes, the hardware. I mean, how does that weigh against them? Do you see that as a emerging service where Apple thinks they're going to make a lot of money?
Well, first of all, totally forgot about Longmire. And listeners, if you have Netflix and you aren't watching Longmire, stop what you're doing. devote 2 days of your life. This is one of the most fantastic shows on TV that I've seen in a long time. Even if you think you don't like Westerns, I mean, it's awesome.
It's modern day.
Yeah. Forget about, you know, superhero stuff. The question comes back to core thing is, do you want to be taken seriously as a service? Now, we've listened to Tim Cook talk about services. We've listened to Tim Cook talk about growth of services. And yet, a couple of weeks ago, we heard from a financial analyst, Tony
Saganacci
from Bernstein, who came out with an interesting number that said Apple is pulling in about $3 billion because they're keeping Google as the default search engine in iOS. Mm-hmm. And that's the bulk of their service revenue. I mean, it's not anything else. It's not the music subscriptions. It's anything else. But there's like significant money. And I mean, go back and check. I thought he said it was the bulk, but I could be wrong about that. My memory isn't what it used to be. But that's pretty significant if you're talking about that's where service revenues are come from. It's not coming from, music subscriptions. It's not coming from all of the other places that Apple would like us to think it's coming from. So the idea of getting into the service businesses is, you know, the future. You want to have hardware. You want to have services. You want those services to be great. You've got a really good music subscription business. One of the reasons it's the default under iOS. If you're going to sign up, it's a lot easier to sign up for that than download Spotify and sign up for Spotify. The next step is, what can you do in terms of original content to the point where that original content can become a service in and of itself, as opposed to simply providing a conduit for Netflix or for HBO. And, you know, we've just heard Amazon will be coming to Apple TV, and it still isn't there, which shows that
the iOS 11 was required.
Yeah, that the video industry, look, you know, sometimes I think, you know, the video industry was put on the earth to make the music guys look innovative and, cutting edge. But the video guys are concerned, especially in an age where, you know, it's not even a question of 15 minutes after, you know, Game of Thrones has been, you know, shown that you can download a high definition version of it to watch whenever you want. We're at the point now where you don't even have to wait for it to be shown. You can download a version of it. So the video guys are concerned, particularly about premium content. Apple does not want to be simply the pipeline to carry other people's content. In an era of services going forward, Apple wants to be a services player, the same way they have with music. But it turns out video is a lot harder than aggregating music. So I won't judge future efforts based on the initial, but what was Netflix's first original content? I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was House of Cards.
House of Cards, yes. I think so. I mean,
and House of Cards was amazing.
Out of the gate. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was talking about it. Anyone who had Netflix was binging it, and people were saying, get Netflix because you want to watch this thing, and there's no other place in the world you're going to watch it. No one is saying, like, well, go out and sign up for, you know, an Apple service because you can watch the next episode of...
We're just going to have to see how that goes in the future.
...of the apps. And
even
with the home court advantage, even with Apple pushing it, you know, through the App Store is something you can see and buy. Reviews of the early two efforts are kind of bad. And the question is, can Apple do a House of Cards, a Longmire, a Bosch, Mozart in the Jungle? Because right now, they're two steps above the kid with the Sony, you know, camcorder at home.
Okay. So we're going to have to wrap that up. That was quite a discussion. How about we take a break and then come back and talk about something up on the list?
Let's do it.
Folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us. I'm talking to Michael Gartenberg.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
We're back with Michael Gartenberg, former Apple Senior Director of Marketing. So what would you like to hit next on our list? I kind of am partial to this education issue because I've been digging into this a lot lately.
Yeah, education is important. By the way, I'll just echo that. Guys, it costs you nothing. Buy your stuff. Go to the website and help support stuff so that you can hear me back on the show again in another 6 months. Anyhow, let's talk Ed. Look, Apple, you know, sometimes talks about music as its DNA, but the truth is the DNA of Apple is education. You know, the number of, you know, kids who grew up on an Apple II playing Oregon Trail in the back of their classroom or typing Tutor. I mean, Apple owned the education market. Apple was synonymous with education. For a long time, Apple actually created curriculum for teachers in order to figure out how to use these things. But again, these were the days when an Apple II was pretty expensive. Maybe you had one, maybe you had two in the classroom. Today, you know, there's absolutely no reason in almost any setting for some degree of funding where every kid can have their own computing device, and that enables teachers to do amazing things. My background is in education. I have a master's in secondary education. And, you know, the idea that, wow, any question that has a factual answer, you can have that answer that immediately changes everything. And whoever can get into these classrooms and own the classroom does two things. First of all, it's really profitable. And, you know, you acquire a customer early, in whether it's primary school, high school, college, you know, you're building their customer for life. So education is a huge, huge market. And it's one of those places where I think Apple is not doing quite as well as they like to be doing.
Things have changed a little bit. It used to be that people who grew up with Apple IIs and Macs kind of got their way in the classroom and agreed that it was the best system. But the technology has changed, and the influx of inexpensive notebook computers, these Chromebooks, and the squeezing of budgets of schools have kind of created this very well-known phenomenon of the influx of the $200 or $300 notebook computers. And Apple doesn't have a corresponding device to go to battle with in the classrooms. And so they focused on the iPad. And so I've been exploring some of this in some of my podcasts and writing. And it turns out that the iPad isn't always the answer, but it seems to be Apple's only tool. What do you think?
Well, you look at the product lines, and you know, Apple's cheapest notebooks come in at, you know, just under $1,000.
Right.
There is no other device other than iPad. And you know, the funny thing is, people kind of dismissed the Chromebook when it first came to market. It was an underpowered thing. It really couldn't do all that much. The initial price points were relatively high, almost to the point of a laptop. And then, you know, Google did a couple of things. One, they worked with manufacturers to bring the price points of these things down. So sure, I can buy a super premium Chromebook, you know, for over $1,000, but I can get an education, you know, Chromebook for $150, which all of a sudden changes the equation. The second is Google focused on their software. The ability for teachers to manage a classroom fairly easily, so that your kids aren't, you know, hanging out all the time on Facebook, and the collaborative environment of the Google ecosystem for docs and spreadsheets and all that other stuff. The idea of adding collaboration was great for, you know, business users. It was huge for education. This is something that took Apple forever to add to even things like iWork before it made iWork, you know, even free. And when you look at the balance between the two, you're just coming up short, even with, you know, today's latest iPad pricing. You're still getting a relatively small screen. You still have to add a keyboard, as opposed to something like a Chromebook, which is virtually disposable. And, you know, if a
rugged, I'm told.
Yeah. And if a kid loses it or breaks it, whatever else, they just have to log into any other Chromebook and all of a sudden all their stuff is there. So this is something Google has really, really focused on, particularly when we talk about that, you know, get the answer to any question as a factual answer. Usually that's coming through Google. Google's spending a ton of time on working to change curriculum. I was reading something where the head of Google's education program said something that to me was like sort of like absolutely profound, and that said, I don't know why we're teaching kids quadratic equations. Like, I've never used a quadratic equation, you know, since I graduated.
You will,
you know,
if you're a physics major.
Right. Yeah. If you're a physics major, great. And the truth is, if you need to know how to solve a quadratic equation, you can look it up online, and in 5 minutes, you can learn how to do it. Let's take this stuff, you know, five steps beyond what we're doing. And Apple tried, look, there was this great deal, I think it was in 2013, 2014, with the LA education system, where they were going to buy a ton of iPads across the board.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember a lot of high-fiving and, you know, clapping and stuff. And wow, did that turn into an utter debacle. And again, it showed that Apple, you know, has got to figure out its way back into the education systems, particularly at a time when Chromebooks are so cheap. I don't have to buy a Chromebook Pixel from Google for $1,500. I can buy them all the way down. We're now seeing Chromebooks that are hybrid that can actually run some.
Do you think Apple will cave and come out with a new MacBook Air with a hard disk for the first time that's really cheap and revise manufacturing methods and get that price down? You think they're ever going to do that?
I mean, it would be nice. I mean, I don't think we're talking hard drive because, again, you know, one of the reasons Chromebooks are cheap is because they don't have mechanical parts like that. So could Apple come back? You know, if we remember back in time, there was the iMac. But there was also something called the eMac that was essentially an iMac that was designed for the education market. It was sold only through education channels. It was optimized for that.
So there's a precedent.
Yeah, there's definitely a precedent, and it was short-lived. I'll go back even further. There was a version of Newton called the E-Mate.
E-Mate.
Remember E-Mate?
They were so cute.
yeah, they were trivia. If you go back and watch that awful movie called Batman and Robin, that was E-Mate was an actual was Batgirl's computer, was an E-Mate. There, talk about obscure Apple trivia. But, yeah, so there's definitely precedent for doing this. The question is how. And, you know, when all you have is a hammer, the whole world looks like a nail. When all you have is an iOS device called iPad, the whole world looks like an iPad.
The problem is that it doesn't meet the curriculum needs of a lot of schools. I had a curriculum director on a previous episode of Background Mode, and she said, it doesn't help our kids learn to type. And there's a test in Colorado in third grade where students have to be able to show that they can type because cursive handwriting is not the thing anymore. It's being able to type on a computer. And when you have a real keyboard, you can prove that you can do that. And it was just one part of the curriculum that was met by the Chromebook.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm actually in the process of writing a piece about education. And, you know, one of the things is there used to be typing classes. It's a little bit before my time. But, you know, you had things like shop and home economics and typing classes. And today you don't really need a typing class. You don't really need to know how to touch type. Maybe you can be like me and like five finger type. But you need to know how to do it. And the only way you can learn how to do it is if you have a keyboard. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, that is table stakes. You can't do anything.
Plus, when you grow up and you're in high school and college, you're going to be using a MacBook Pro, maybe. So you're going to be escalating up to a real grown-up notebook computer. So it's smart for Google to get in there at the lower levels and get them accustomed to using a grown-up computer.
Right. And a keyboard is a keyboard. And as soon as you look at the cheapest iPad, you strip it all the way down, you're still needing to add some sort of keyboard to that, increasing the cost. You know, we are seeing some good stuff by Apple, you know, moving into things like better manageability tools that are out there. So, you know, there is some degree of control. We're seeing some really innovative things like the Swift programming language. I'm not entirely sure that coding needs to be part of a curriculum, but for the kids
it does.
Yeah, but for the kids that do want to learn that, you know, the same way that kids want to learn how to repair automobile engines, kids that want to learn how to code. I mean, this is a great entrance way to do it. There's a ton of great education software on iOS and iPad, but the price differentials are so huge. The fact that you're only dealing with a single source vendor, which very few education districts, I understand, want to do that because, you know, I'll take multiple bids on iPads, except they're all coming from Cupertino. And the fact that Google is doubling down on Chromebook for education. And again, you know, Google history, you know, Chromebooks were run out of one division of Google. Android was run out of another division led by Andy Rubin. Andy's vision was Android everywhere. The Chromebooks was the notion of we don't need Android and all that sophistication. We can deliver everything through, you know, the Chrome browser. But that's all gone. Now it's all merged into one thing. We've hearing these rumors of a new hybrid operating system that would be designed to run both Android applications with greater sophistication, as well as Chrome applications. Hearing at least little birdies whispering in my ear that we're going to see something well before the end of the year, with vendors coming in at multiple price points.
Folks, you hit it here first.
Yeah, that's the type of thing that if I were Apple, I'd be concerned about, because how do you bring the price of an iPad down to that level? And especially when you bring down to that level and add in things like a keyboard. Now, the other thing Apple has going for it, though, is that, you know, we are talking about a generation that has grown up with touch and multi-touch, and, you know, it's fun watching a little kid pick up a Mac and try and touch the screen. I know that I was actually tapping on the screen of my MacBook here, trying to get Skype working. I realized that my MacBook didn't have a touch screen. So, you know, maybe we'll see a touch screen, low end version of MacBook. You look at a MacBook right now and it's, you know, no longer the cutting edge, super expensive device. Apple can bring that down. We could possibly see some, you know, touch implementations into a future version. But, you know, again, the future of Apple right now seems to be iOS, not macOS. iOS doesn't lend itself well to the idea of a keyboard or touch or anything else in a cheap, you know, situation. And it's not like we're back in the days when Apple had no competition in the classroom. You know, you could get an Apple IIe, you could get nothing. And one of the reasons Apple lost the classroom to some degree was cheap IBM PC clones that could also run Oregon Trail, but run them awful lot cheaper.
Okay. Well, I think we're out of time. Boy, did that go fast.
Whoa.
There was a whole bunch of things I wanted to get to. You're just going to have you back on the show again, excuse me, and talk about the other things we had on our list. Want to do that?
You see, that's sort of my plan, is to go really long on two topics, forcing you to have me back on some other stuff.
Well, I'm delighted to do that.
Yeah, and hey, if you want to do a special, you know, brief September one, I suspect there might be a couple of things you and I might want to chat about that, you know, might not want to wait 6 months, but hey, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
We'll see when we work something out. Okay. So again, this was terrific. Thanks for your wonderful insights. Thanks for being on the show with me. And listeners, I hope you enjoyed the show. Oh, one more thing. How to contact you. I forgot.
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Gartenberg. If you're feeling so inclined to reach out directly, you can find me m@michaelgartenberg.com and keep your cards and letters coming. I respond to all of them.
Cool. Thank you very much. And we'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Note.